AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. Four people are dead, four others wounded in a shooting in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Police Sergeant Doug Foreman says two of six people at a home were killed before his officers got a call of another shooting at a nearby business.
Maybe a mile from the first location, mile and a half. There we had a second shooting that took place there, incident, and an adult Hispanic male was also killed.
The suspected gunman was later found dead in his car. South Korean President Park Geun-hye says her heart breaks when she thinks of what the families of those missing in a sunken ferry are going through. She met with some 50 relatives earlier today. At least 244 people are dead in the disaster, some 60 others still missing in the hulk. Meanwhile, documents show that the ferry may have been badly overloaded with cargo, a factor that could have played a role in the ship's sinking. President Obama pokes fun at himself and other Washington politicians at the annual White House Correspondents Association dinner. He also took a shot at House Speaker John Boehner and his tan.
These days, the House Republicans actually give John Boehner a harder time than they give me, which means orange really is the new black.
There's a growing diversity gap in the nation's public schools. More than 80% of teachers are white, while almost half of the students are minorities. LaRuth Gray with NYU's Metropolitan Center for Research on Equality and the Transformation of Schools says most minority students don't want to be teachers.
Teaching has become the whipping boy of education, or the whipping girl, or whatever it is. It's not seen as the ideal career to have.
The National Education Association, the Education Department, the American Federation of Teachers, and others are looking for ways to turn around those numbers to make teaching more attractive to minorities. This is AP Radio News. The Thunder, Clippers, and Pacers all survived Game 7s in their NBA playoff series. Oklahoma City's Russell Westbrook says the team had to win in front of the home crowd.
We fought too hard to put ourselves in position to come back home in front of our fans and let them down.
Chris Paul says he and his L.A. teammates had a tough battle with Golden State Warriors.
Ups and downs throughout the entire series, but this was a slugfest.
While Indiana's Paul George was relieved to finally close out the Atlanta Hawks.
We're happy to get over this hump.
Later this afternoon, two more first-round final games with the Nets at Toronto and the Mavericks taking on the Spurs in San Antonio. California Chrome wins Kentucky Derby by nearly two lengths. 77-year-old trainer Art Sherman on his first ever Derby winner.
He ran his eyeballs out. He's really a super nice horse to train.
Chrome's owners now have their sights set on the Preakness 2 weeks from yesterday. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
For too many parents, a baby's first steps aren't just a milestone. They're a miracle, made possible by volunteers like you who walk in March for Babies. The money you raise funds research and local programs that help babies overcome the challenges of premature birth and birth defects. Sign up today at marchforbabies.org to take the steps that help make milestones and even miracles possible for thousands of families. Who will you march for?
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide. But only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Les Smolin. We have a great lineup of guests for you today on our show, including Kathy Calvin, President and CEO of United Nations Foundation, Gary Shoemaker, President and CEO of C2 Solutions Group, Inc., Cynthia Traeger, Director, DC Founder Institute, and Keith Lemmer, President, Wellnet Healthcare. My first guest is going to be Kathy Calvin, President and CEO of United Nations Foundation. Welcome, Kathy. And Kathy, what is the United Nations Foundation?
Well, great to be here. Thanks so much. The United Nations Foundation was founded 15 years ago by Ted Turner, a great businessman, a great philanthropist, and a visionary who wanted to put his money where his mouth was. He believed the UN was an essential institution and was doing good things, and he wanted to make sure the U.S. was paying its dues. So mm-hmm. he made a $1 billion contribution.
It's a large contribution. Something he wanted to make an impact on, apparently.
Yeah, Ted makes an impact every time he does something. But the nice thing is his vision was that it would create a platform where not only a billionaire could help the U.N., but mm-hmm. anybody else who wanted to be part of the global problem solving that the U.N. does for people around the world on a daily basis. So whether you're 8 years old and yeah. raise money for bed nets or you're a major corporation, Ted's created the platform.
That's amazing. And how did you get involved?
Well, I was working at AOL Time Warner. Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to be part of the internet revolution after being in politics. I've been in all three sectors. And I knew that the UN Foundation was looking for a chief operating officer. And although I didn't know much about the UN, I knew how to translate issues from one audience to another, and I thought I could be of help because what we really do is help people understand the strategic value of what the UN does around the world and find a way that they can be part of it.
So you have this gift for communicating and translating.
I have a gift, yes. It's lucky.
For you, when did that first show up as a child?
I think probably in high school. I ran for every office. I was a good Girl Scout selling cookies. I did a lot to kind of make an impact everywhere I could. So I guess I learned it from my parents. My dad was a salesman. You gotta be good
yeah.
at communicating. And my mom was an actress and a part-time volunteer. So
dad was a salesman for, I think you said GE, right?
General Electric.
And mom was an actress. She gave that up, though, you said.
Well, she was an actress in college, but then she came back to it in civic theater as a housewife. Yeah, which was wonderful to see. She was a comedian. That's hard to be. Hard to be a comedian.
I bet. So tell me about mom in that regard. So were you the oldest or youngest, or where do you fit in the lineup there?
Oldest. I have a younger brother.
Uh-huh. So you were the oldest. What did mom rely on you for growing up?
She looked to me to be the mature child.
The mature child.
The mature child, and to be somewhat the achiever, mm-hmm. and to maybe fulfill.
Why was that important for her?
I think because she felt she gave things up to get married. That was the era. You know, women gave up a life and a career because they would form the household for their husband. There's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with it,
right.
But she resented it.
She
and
did.
I grew up knowing that. And so I guess I grew up thinking, well, I'd like to do it all. I'd like to work. I'd like to have a family. And I want to have an impact. And I think I'll try.
And she never put boundaries around you that said you couldn't?
Never did, nor did my dad, more importantly.
Mm-hmm.
They both
so highly
believed.
Supportive.
Highly supportive. Thought I could do anything. I think they were surprised I went into politics first. That seemed to be outside the realm, but
where'd that come from?
You know, I think it came from fun. You know, it's fun to be in politics. Back then, it was fun to be in politics.
This is local politics, I'm sorry.
I actually started at the national level working for a U.S. senator. How crazy is that? And I had the opportunity mm-hmm. to be a press secretary. translation skills.
There you go.
And there I was doing Democratic politics. My Republican father thought it was a little weird, but my Democratic mother loved it. No, he was on board.
You had a blended family.
A blended family, a little bit of each. Well,
that must have been interesting around the dinner table.
Yeah, yeah.
What was that like?
You know, my parents loved to argue. I hate to argue. I'm a consensus builder, but they loved arguing. And so I think I saw the pluses and minuses of people sharing their thoughts in lots of different ways. They did it for fun. I grew up wanting everybody to come to the table and make a common solution. So I guess that probably helped me shape my life too.
So what was the conversation like around the table? I've got a Republican and a Democrat and a consensus builder who at the time, I don't know, did you know you were a consensus builder?
Probably not. But I was learning.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was often picking each other's argument apart. So that's a great thing to learn as a child. That how do you listen to what somebody's saying and find that one kernel that you can go after later and say, but you said, or to take that kernel and build on it and say, well, if you think that, then you would obviously agree with me on this. So I learned probably a lot of my verbal skills right then and there.
Didn't know it at the time that you would actually be using it.
Exactly. Right. Right. Thought I'd be a dancer. No, just kidding.
Now, you told us an interesting story about Dad. And the fact that he was a GE salesman.
Yeah.
And you got to ride with him.
I did. I did.
What was that like?
Oh, it was cool. I felt like I was going inside the inner sanctum. You know, you drive up to a facility, Whirlpool, Maytag, where he was selling big GE engines, and we'd go in for meetings. And I was always shocked that we weren't really talking about those engines. We were often talking about golf.
Really? I mean, he could take you into client meetings?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Like, I look back on it now and think, was that unprofessional? But sometimes I sat out in the reception area with the secretary. Sometimes I just sat there reading a book very quietly and pretending to read and maybe be listening instead. I think this was a special bonding thing we had. I was very lucky because he was on the road a lot.
So what was I'm assuming that you did this when class was not
session. Yeah. Summers.
So he wanted to take you along, or you wanted to go with him, or how'd that work?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe my mother wanted to get rid of me. Who knows? I think it was a combination of his wanting me along, because that was the time we could have together, and my thinking I was the luckiest little girl in the world to go along and be part of Daddy's world.
So it was pretty special.
It was special.
Hmm. So you got, I don't know how many years this went on for, but
it stopped as I got older. I probably got more interested in boys than travel anyway.
But when you think back to that time, what is it that you kind of take away from that experience, having had that time with your dad?
Well, I look back and think, you know, it's very hard to know your dad when you're a child, and dads back then didn't share a lot.
Right.
So I got to see him blossom. You know, he was quite gregarious. He was a funny guy. He was really good at building relationships. And I got to see something that I thought was what the world would be like when I grew up. This is how adults acted. And I thought it was exciting. And it probably led me to want to try to have a job where I was able to share my connectedness with others. And then from my mother's side, I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to be somebody helping change the world. So luckily I've had jobs all along that let me be a business person in an area where we were making a difference. Kind of a good deal.
Yeah, something that you said earlier about the relationship aspect and how critical that is to whatever it is you're doing. And that was a good piece of what you were able to kind of glean from the experience with your dad, from a work standpoint at least.
It sure was. I think he really showed me that you don't sell anything if you don't first sell yourself and build the relationship with someone. People take things on because they have a trust.
Right.
And because they know who the other person is. And so I really understood that you don't go right to the bottom line first thing out. You build that slow addition of something about yourself personally, very much like this radio show. You're kind of helping people understand who you are, and then the relationship comes.
And is that what you do in work now? I mean, if you think about the uniqueness of what you bring to the dance, so to speak.
Absolutely. You know, it's a lot to ask a partner to work with the United Nations. So we try to be that trusted intermediary to say, work with us. We understand the way you talk. We understand the language on both sides. Business speaks differently than the UN for sure, and even nonprofits, we'll help everybody come to the table and find out what's in it for you, what's in it for me, how do we come together and make a difference? Because everybody wants to help.
Yeah.
We know they do. We just have to help them find the way.
Do you think that that's what they saw in you when they asked you to basically run the organization?
Well, I think so. I had a background in politics, so I really understood the policy aspects. Mm-hmm. I had a background in press, so I understood communications. And I really appreciated the value of the United Nations, if only because I thought we're in a shrinking world and we had to go there. I'd been at AOL, and I could really see that this is no longer a world of countries. It's a world of no borders.
Mm-hmm. And if you kind of step back and reflect on the experience you're having so far, what's the things that surprised you most about you and the job that you have now?
I think I went into it thinking, boy, you have to be smart on foreign policy to work with the United Nations. And I think what I learned was you have to be smart on understanding what matters to people in understanding the value of humanitarian work around the world. So I learned that I needed to open my eyes to things that I didn't understand and be able to translate that to others and help others understand what they could do to help.
What gives you the confidence to do that? I mean, something had to happen when you were growing up that kind of instilled that ability in you to, I call it, take that risk, if you will, not even knowing what's on the other side of it.
Yeah, I think I took a lot of risks in school, in high school, and I was the mediator among all the parties. You know, I had friends who were the popular kids and friends who were the less popular kids, and that was always my place in the world. I was probably an intermediator and facilitator and negotiator before I knew it.
Thanks, Kathy. We've been speaking with Kathy Calvin, President and CEO of the United Nations Foundation. Kathy, what's the website address?
It's www.unfoundation.org.
Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. Welcome, Jody. Jody, what is Acumetrics?
Acumetrics is a firm that works with CEOs that are interested in growing their revenues and bottom lines in a scalable, sustainable way.
And what's your role within the company?
I'm the founder and president.
And what is it about the job that you bring that's so unique to you, that special gift, as we say?
That special gift? I enjoy working with the CEOs to have them achieve goals that they thought were impossible.
And what is it about the organization that makes it so special?
Our clients say that it's the three P's: our people, our platform, and our processes. Our people are highly qualified and they're fun to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Our processes are enabling of reliable and timely financial information, and our platform is scalable.
And who is, or what is, perhaps, the perfect client for you?
Businesses of any size that want reliable, timely financial information.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I enjoy working with the clients and making a difference. We like to help the CEOs understand their financial information so they can make different choices tomorrow to impact future results of the business.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.acumetricsllc.com.
Thank you, Jody.
Thanks, Les.
We've been speaking with Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Les Smolin. For this segment, we have Gary Shoemaker, President and CEO, C2 Solutions Group. Welcome, Gary. Gary, what is C2 Solutions Group?
We're a service-disabled, veteran-owned federal government contractor. We provide professional services to the federal government.
And how did you get involved with the company?
In prior lifetimes, I was the chief operating officer of two very successful small federal contractors. I was thinking about what I want to do with the rest of my life. I said I can be a chief operating officer forever, but it's a very demanding job. So mm-hmm. I said, let me just hang up my shingle and do a little consulting. Let me find four or five small businesses that want some advice, want to pick my brain on what I know, and let me help them develop the intellectual infrastructure that it takes to be successful in this business.
Mm-hmm.
One of those companies came back to me and said, you know, we're really hard up to pay you, but we'd like to make you a partner in the company.
Yeah.
And I said, huh. I don't know why I did it, because I had several people come to me with similar plans,
yeah.
but for some reason I took this one up. And
what do you think it was about this company in particular that kind of piqued your interest?
Well, I've got two partners in the company, and they're both good guys, and I like working with them. And it was a dynamic challenge.
And it's not easy working with partners. I mean, most people will tell you that, and some are very successful at it. What do you think accounts for your success working with those two partners?
We're very close. A year and a half ago, we went to Normandy, where the D-Day invasion was, together, just with our wives, just to get to know each other better. And we're all good friends, and we socialize with each other, and it's been a marriage made in heaven.
So why is that important? Why is it important to actually get to know one another?
I think I tell them I'm actually, with all the legal underpinnings to this, I'm actually more connected to them than I am to my wife.
How so?
You got the articles of incorporation. You got the day-to-day. I spend more time with them than I do at home.
Uh-huh.
It's a very tight relationship.
So the thing, in your experience, mm-hmm. and it sounds like you've worked for a lot of different companies.
I have.
In your experience, the thing that makes these things work from a relationship standpoint is what? What's the thing you bring that way?
I think part of it is the trust in each other. Part of it is experience and respect for each other's knowledge and for what each of us brings to the company.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a small town in Michigan, in central Michigan. I hardly ever mention the name to people who aren't from Michigan, but it's called Owosso. It's got about 20,000 people.
That's not that small.
Well, it's hardly anybody's ever heard of it. So.
Yeah, yeah. What were Mom and Dad doing back then?
My dad, I didn't think of it this way then, but my dad was actually an entrepreneur. He had a music store that he expanded into a chain. The chain got to be two stores long. He had part interest in a shoe store that he expanded into a chain. The chain got to be two stores long. He had a women's wear store. He had a gas station that from time to time that he sold to his manager and then bought back from his manager and then sold to his manager and then bought back from his manager. He had a chain of apartment houses, which sounds mm-hmm. much more grandiose than it really was. It was actually five houses that had been converted to apartments. None of them had more than five apartments in them. But it was a methodology where every morning and every night, they were coal-fired furnaces. Every morning and every night, he had to visit all of them and put coal in the stoker so they'd have heat during the Michigan winter the next day.
So, interesting. He was an entrepreneur before the phrase was probably even coined.
That's right. He was.
What drove him that way? Do you know?
He grew up in the Depression. He grew up when times were tough. He went to college dirt poor. He used to tell a story about the school where he went to college. You could not buy beer. You could not sell beer in that town unless you also sold food. So there was a bar that he would go to for dinner, and he would buy a nickel beer and fill up a bowl of tomato soup with crackers, and that would be dinner for him. He took ROTC when he was in college because they gave you clothes to wear one day a week.
So he was very purposeful in the things that he did.
Yes.
You used the word methodical earlier.
Yeah.
Is that something you kind of take away from him?
Well, I think you have to have methodology. You have to have process to make a business successful. It's the ability to do the same thing the same way over and over again, and then you can adapt it and change it. But if you're reinventing the wheel every time you do something, you can't grow. You can't grow the business.
Did you learn that from your dad?
I think so, yes.
Hmm. Is would he have been surprised by what it is that you've become today in terms of the leader of multiple organizations?
I think he probably would, and it's more than anything else, is he didn't realize what he was doing. He was working hard and had a great work ethic, and it led to moderate success for him. But you know what I've done is much bigger.
Mm. Yeah, but start someplace.
You got to start someplace.
And you mentioned mom as well. So what was mom doing?
Mom worked in the business. She managed the drugstore. She managed the second music store. And she managed the family.
So pretty much like, yeah, the family was the business. But did your kids work in the business also? You had a younger brother?
I had two younger brothers. And, yeah, we all worked in the business. I worked in the business. I've worked since I was 12 or so. My first job was sweeping the floor at the music store.
Was that at his request or was that your initiative?
It was kind of, you know, what you did in the family. I don't know that you needed to have somebody start it. It was just everybody knew that's what was going to happen.
Everybody pitched in.
Yeah.
Interesting. What'd you do with the money?
I saved my money. That was going to be my college fund. I made a whopping 50 cents an hour. And
didn't spend it in all one place.
Didn't spend it all in one place. When the business took a bad turn, I loaned the money to my father. And, you know, the business never took a better turn before he died, so I never saw the money again.
Wait. How old were you when you loaned this money to him?
Oh, like 18, 19.
18, 19. Did you have any second guess about giving him the money?
No.
That's interesting. I mean, I have no idea what that's like. What was that like for you? And I don't even know how much money, but whatever it was meaningful.
Well, that was enough money to buy about a year's worth of college back then, which wasn't very much money. Isn't very much money in today's dollars, but
back then it was.
Yeah.
And you gave it to him.
Yeah.
Did he ask for it, or was it just something you said? I can contribute. I can help.
I think he asked for it, but it's been a long time.
Yeah. So did it affect your ability to go to college?
I went to college. I was not going to go through college, 4 years of college in 4 years.
Why is that?
Because I couldn't afford to be a full-time student. I was working all the time.
So you're working and going to college.
Working and going to college. And I got a letter from my draft board that said, and this is the Vietnam era, that said, you're not making normal progress towards your degree, so we're going to take away your college student deferment and we're going to make you 1A.
So they were looking for a full-time student deferment and you were doing it part-time.
Yeah. And so a 1A deferment, a 1A draft classification meant you were going to be going to Vietnam pretty quickly.
And you were the oldest.
And I was the oldest, yes.
What was your parents' reaction to that?
By that point, my parents were both dead.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry there.
Yeah.
So they didn't get to see you while you were in college then, while you were working as well. So what happened? Did you get drafted?
The college had a guy whose job was to be the draft counselor for students who had that situation. He was an old retired colonel who took the summers off. This was in June. He had a deputy. The deputy was the ROTC colonel. So I took the letter into the ROTC colonel and I said, "What's this mean?" And he says, "Ah, you're going to be pounding down rice paddies in Vietnam by September unless you sign up for ROTC."
So you joined.
So I joined. And
what'd that do for you?
It was when you signed the contract, it was a 2-year obligation. At the end of 2 years, when I would have gotten out and gotten a civilian job, I was sitting in the middle of Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to go to job interviews when you're in Canto, Vietnam.
Yeah.
And they were promising you about anything in the world if you'd sign up for one more year. So I said, "Well, send me where I want to go and give me the job I want, and I'll stay in for one more year." And so I stayed in for one more year, and then they said, "How'd you like to go to graduate school? Free ride. You know, we'll pay for everything."
Right.
And I said, "That sounds like a pretty good idea, but it's 2 years of payback for every year you spend in graduate school."
So you kept re-upping.
So, yeah. So pretty soon you get to 10 years, and you say, "Geez, after 20, I could get full retirement pay for the rest of my life and medical benefits and everything for the rest of my life. So let me just stay in and for the 20.
So when you look back on those 20 years, what's the one thing you take away from that shows up today in the way you lead?
I think it's that you have to do what needs to be done. It's work ethic. And it's not count what you're doing. It's do what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way to end this. What's the website address, Gary?
www.c2sginc.com.
We've been speaking with Gary Shoemaker, President and CEO, C2 Solutions Group. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. Isabella, what is BusinessWise CPAs?
BusinessWise CPA supports government contractors, small businesses, and nonprofits with outsourced CFO and financial consulting services.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the Marketing Director.
And as a Marketing Director, what does that mean?
Well, I actually wear several hats. My primary role is to CPA through referrals, client meetings, networking in the D.C. area, as well as supporting current client relationships.
And what do you like most about your job?
I like the most that I don't have to be at a desk all day. I'm out and about meeting new folks and learning experiences from other entrepreneurs.
Great. What makes your organization so special in your view?
I believe our added value is that we are not just a number report kind of type firm. We're very much integrated with our clients. They rely on us for all important decisions. We help them not only with the numbers, but on the future growth of the business.
And what is it that the clients appreciate most about the company?
That they can call us and they talk to the same person every time.
Okay, and who's the perfect client?
Perfect client is small to mid-size organization looking to save on a full-time employee and as well as get the added value of the consulting.
Great. What's the website for the company?
www.businesswisecpa.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Les Smolin. For this segment, we have Cynthia Traeger, CEO, Pacific Holding, and Director, DC Founder Institute. Welcome, Cynthia. Cynthia, what is the DC Founder Institute?
So the Founder Institute is the largest idea stage technology accelerator in the world. We currently have programs in 61 cities in 33 countries on 6 continents. The DC program has been in existence since 2009.
Yeah, what does that mean when you said we're the largest technology accelerator in the world? What does that mean?
So we take idea stage entrepreneurs, maybe somebody who's got an idea to start a company, and we put them through a 14-week process that helps them take that idea and formulate it into a true working business model.
Okay, and your role here is
to be a director. The program. Yep. I have a counterpart who helps me through a 14-week process. 30 regional CEO mentors that come in and help our entrepreneurs think through their ideas.
And at any one point in time, how many entrepreneurs are you working with?
We had 94 apply to our program this last go round. We
for each 14-week program.
For a 14-week program, we brought 25 of them in, accepted 25 into the program, and we graduated 9.
And what is it about the work that appeals to you?
It gives me an opportunity to give back. You know, when I spun up my first company, there was no one I could reach out to and say, am I doing this right? I've got a problem with my business model. Can you help me? And so we really help them through that process right now.
And it sounds like you were an entrepreneur yourself. So who kind of helped you and gave back to you?
Well, in the early years, it was tough. You know, I spun my first company up in 1989, and so there weren't a lot of folks to reach out to. We had been fairly successful in business. I had been in business 6 or 7 years, and I ran into a group of women entrepreneurs in the Boston area that would get together once a month for about 4 hours every Tuesday morning, and we would literally talk through our business issues, you know. If you need some help with an issue, an HR issue, or, you know, we're taking venture money or doing anything, we would help each other out. And so that was kind of the first
But I always thought in business, it's ruthless, it's cutthroat. People don't help one another. They want to crush each other. You're telling me something different.
Well, you know, on the competitive stage, it might be a little brutal. Mm-hmm. But as business leaders and entrepreneurs, we have to bounce ideas off of each other. I mean, you know, if I can help somebody in an adjacent business be successful, that usually means that my business is going to be successful as well.
And it's not seen as a sign of weakness either, is it?
Absolutely not. It's seen as a sign of business maturity.
I appreciate the fact that you frame it that way, because I think some people may have the impression it's not. So where does the seed for all this entrepreneurship come from for you?
I have an interesting background, so I have a...
Well, take us back to your childhood.
So,
where'd you grow up?
I grew up in San Diego.
Uh-huh.
As a pre-adolescent, my family moved out here to the Washington area and have been here ever since.
What was Dad doing?
Dad started as a financial analyst in the aerospace industry and ended up taking a job out here with the Defense Department. So he retired from the Defense Logistics Agency.
Mm-hmm. Was that a big move for you when you moved from San Diego to here? Because you're talking completely different environments.
It was a big move. You know, when you're fairly young, you know, you leave your friends behind. You kind of leave your environment behind. But the D.C. area is a great area.
Yeah. How old were you when that happened?
Oh, I was preteen.
You're preteen, and you were the younger, you're the older of two.
I'm the older of two. Yep, I have a younger brother.
Mm-hmm. So here you are, preteen. Mom and Dad say, we're moving.
Yeah.
You got all your friends out there. You got some of the best climate in the country, as I understand it.
It was awesome.
And you're going to Washington.
Yep.
Did you know anything about Washington at the time?
Well, we had some family out here, so we had been out a few times. Knew it was cold.
Most people would agree this past winter, yeah.
Was kind of excited, actually, as a kid to have a change of season, right?
Yeah.
In San Diego, you don't get to see much but the sun.
So what was the hardest part for you about making that adjustment?
I think, you know, learning to have new friends, mm-hmm. you know. Although my dad worked for the Department of Defense, we weren't necessarily a military family, you know. So I didn't grow up making a change making a move every 2 or 4 years, right? You know, so that was the toughest thing. But
right.
Have dozens of amazing friends here in the Washington area, and have had many, many of them mm-hmm. for, you know, close to 40-some years. So.
And what's the age difference between you and your brother?
14 months.
So are you big sister for him in that regard? So, you know, you kind of, You pave the way a little bit for him to make it a little easier to sell in a brand new town, or what?
He was a football player, so...
A football player.
So if I was the big sister, it wasn't in size, so... Yeah. Yep, going to school, he played football, so...
Mm-hmm. And what was Mom doing?
So Mom was a homemaker. Yep, very supportive, but stay-at-home mom.
Mm-hmm. When you think about her... What's the thing you kind of pulled from her as a homemaker that kind of shows up for you today?
So my parents have always been extremely independent. They built their first house from the ground up
really?
In San Diego. Yep, literally from the ground up. I have photos and slides of my dad and my grandfather literally digging the foundation for their first home with shovels. So my parents have always been extremely resilient. They've been very independent, and they've always been very supportive of, I won't say being entrepreneurial, but they've mm-hmm. been very supportive of being independent and kind of paving your own way.
So what did your mom encourage you all along to be doing?
Well, a lot of focus on school. I was classically trained as a pianist growing up. A lot of focus on education. A lot of focus on empowering yourself to be able to be independent, you know.
So they wanted for you the same as they had.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Interesting. So classically trained pianist.
Classically trained pianist.
How does a classically trained pianist end up in technology?
Well, I had a passion for being creative with things, mm-hmm. and I have always kind of had a left brain or right brain kind of, you know, conundrum going on. And so while I love music and creativity, I love numbers in building things, and I'm not afraid of taking something apart and trying to put it back together again. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was the perfect mix.
It's an interesting mix in that regard, especially the way you describe it. So you were classically trained. How young were you when you were playing piano?
Gosh, I can't remember a time when I wasn't. I mean, if I was walking, I think I was sitting in front of a piano.
And was anybody else, mom, dad, musically inclined or not?
My mom was, for sure. Yeah.
So you get that influence from her?
From her, yeah. The discipline probably from my dad and my mom, but musical background from my mom, for sure.
You had a cute expression that you use about your dad in terms of what you got from him. Do you remember what you told us?
Oh, he's a numbers guy.
Yeah?
Yep, keen eye to the bottom line.
Keen eye to the bottom line. So why is that important?
Well, in business, if, you know, it doesn't matter what business you're in. In business, we're in business to succeed, right? And if you're a commercial business, generally that has a little bit to do with financial success. Mm-hmm. So keeping a keen eye to the bottom line generally means you're going to be doing okay.
And how do you marry that with the idea that a classically trained pianist brings a creative musical side to the equation? Where do the two kind of intersect?
So the first company that I spun up took data and information and applied sound to it.
You data know? And information, and you put sound to it.
Put sound to it. So if, you know, you're trying to take some seismic information, some earthquake data, and you want to look at that, most people would take it and graph it. You know, a point up, a point down, yeah. A point left, a point right. Some way like that. Well, we can do the same thing with sound. We just would apply a different sound to a different data point. Maybe if it's going up, it might go up in scale.
Well, where does the idea for even that come from?
I don't know.
Where did it come for you?
Well, you know, we're all sighted. The vast majority of us we're sighted, we're hearing gifted, and it just didn't make sense to be able to try and analyze things, to look at information, to look at the world without being able to listen to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people have a passion for the things that they see. I have a passion for the things that I hear, and it just made sense.
A passion for the things that you hear.
Absolutely.
Interesting. And you've made a career out of it.
Made a very productive business and a career out of it, absolutely.
Hmm. Is there something that surprised you about yourself in terms of the things that you've been able to put yourself into? As you said, you've been involved in a lot of different companies that you've started, it sounds like.
Yep.
And this last, one of the last pieces here that we've talked about was the Founders Institute. Is there something about all this that kind of surprised you, that you learned about you in all of this?
I think what has probably more than surprised me, satisfied me the most, is that I get an awful lot of pleasure helping new or inexperienced founders find their way. And when they're successful, I feel like I'm successful. You know, if I can give back in that way,
yeah,
it's such a bonus.
That's great. Thank you, Cynthia. What's the website address?
The Founder Institute is fi.co or founderinstitute.com. fi.co works.
We've been speaking with Cynthia Traeger, director of the DC Founder Institute and also CEO of Pacific Holding. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offutt Kerman. What is Offutt Kerman, Doug?
Offutt Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work with in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into two particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying, and since then he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Right. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offutkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Les Smolin. For this final segment, we have Keith Lemmer, President, Wellnet Healthcare. Welcome, Keith. Keith, what is Wellnet Healthcare?
Thank you for having me, Les. And what Wellnet does is we sell health plans as a less costly alternative to the large insurance companies and the exchanges.
And how big or small is it?
So we're about a little over 100 employees and do a little over $130 million in revenue.
And how'd you get the job?
We've been at it for about 15 years. I joined having previously been with a venture capital firm. We started off as a dental benefit provider, and the gentleman who started it was looking to sell the company. I said, don't sell. I said, I will hire, I will train, I will grow, but I don't want to work for you. So we arranged something very strategic and took a little dental company into a full-service health plan management company now 15 years later.
So what did he see in you that said, I trust this guy to put my hands in what it is he's describing?
You know, we have a terrific relationship. You know, he's kind of a visionary, and me, I know how to build teams, both strategically take ideas, roll them out, and train. And, you know, we've taken a tiny little enterprise and rolled it out now to about 25 markets around the country. So we work very well together.
Obvious question. So when did you first realize as a young child that you had this gift of being able to build teams and roll out ideas and make something of them?
You know, Les, I've been an entrepreneur since I guess I could crawl almost. I've been selling T-shirts on the golf course, sodas on the golf course on a hot day, T-shirts in high school, car wash business. And when I was in college, had a telephone publishing business that I rolled out to 55 schools. So, you know, if you want to make money, you got to get off your rear end. And, you know, I've been doing it since I was a young man.
So where'd that expression come from?
You know, I've gotten that from my father, actually. I come from an entrepreneur family. You know, my father, my uncles, my grandfather, cousins, my brother, everybody's in their own business. And, you know, taking ideas and, you know, really executing and building those solid teams. So I've had that from the time I was a young man.
So you grew up around this, and it
yes.
just got infused inside you. Did you ever think of anything other than that?
You know, I always knew I was going to be in my own business. You know, for about 6 months after I sold my first business, I went to go work for somebody. Could not stand every moment of it. You know, frankly, the only thing I did take away from it, Les, was systems and processes. But at the end of the day, you know, as hard as you work, that's as much as you can make. And, you know, having a blank sheet of paper to, you know, create ideas, test them, try them. I mean, what better way than it is it to really work for yourself?
Well, so, what systems and processes got to do with making money?
You know, if you really want to scale a business, you've got to be able to have controls and measurements and find out where there are problems and where there are opportunities and fix it and measure it. And if you don't have those systems and process, you might as well close up shop.
And where did that lesson come from?
Came from this direct marketing company that I worked with when I was about 22 years old. We were in the psychic hotline business, Dionne Warwick, and made those infomercials.
I remember that.
It was measuring those calls and who were, you know, calling in on a regular basis and how to remarket to them. And, you know, that's where I got that experience from.
Hmm. You said you've been working since you could almost crawl.
Sure.
What was the first job you had?
So, you know, aside from car washing, I was selling Coca-Colas on the golf course on a cold day. It was 50 cents. On a hot day, it was $1.50, and then rolled out to a T-shirt business that I started in high school.
How old were you then?
Let's see. Coke business was probably, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, and T-shirts, 14, 15, 16.
Most kids, 10, 11, 12, that are out playing ball or doing something. What was the impetus for you?
You know what it was? The impetus was that, you know, my father, as an entrepreneur, would only give me a certain amount of money. And if anybody can see my fingers, it's my thumb and my forefinger very close together. Uh-huh. And I wanted more. And, you know, in order to get more, he wasn't going to give it to me. I had to go make it myself.
So you got all this money, you went out and spent it.
I spent a little of it, you know, maybe a few dates, things like that. Bought a car, you know, when I was 16, and I put a lot of money
away.
You
bought a car when you were 16?
Sure.
You've got this independence going for you about the idea that if you want something, you go get it.
Absolutely.
I mean, self-reliance, I should say, perhaps.
If I was taught, if you want to make a penny in this world, you got to get off your rear end and do it. And I teach my three kids that as well. You know, nothing is given to you. You have to earn it, you have to learn it, and you have to repeat it.
And that was the gift that Dad kept giving to
you. Absolutely. Both my father as well as my grandfather, he worked for 50 years before he sold his drug wholesale company.
Were you close with him?
Very close with him. Worked for him during some of the summers when I was a youngster. And he really... threaded that into both myself, my brother, my cousins, and everybody here now, 35 members. Everybody's in the business community, and they have that same kind of DNA that drives them to succeed.
Hmm. Well, it sounds like your grandfather had a huge influence on you.
Tremendous. I mean, as nice as they come, a hard worker and really a quiet man who had an expression was, you know, nothing is ever a real problem. It's a minor business irritation. And you'll get through it, you'll rectify it, and you'll do it with a smile as long as, you know, you take care of the end person, which is always the customer.
Yeah. So where does the confidence for that, believing in that, come from?
You know, at the end of the day, you know, it's really the way that I was raised. You can look at the glass half full or half empty, and, you know, someone gives you lemons and you make lemonade, and, you know, it's what you make of it. It's how you handle situations, how you compartmentalize it, and, you know, how you look at problems, because to me they're not problems. They're really challenges that need, you know, rectifying.
So how with that perspective do you look at failure?
For me, while I've failed at a couple of things, let's call it in the business, when we've started some entities, at the end of the day, they're not failures, they're learning experiences. And, you know, for those that have started businesses or worked at companies, nothing is ever, you know, let's call it a challenge or a difficulty. Really what it is how can I use this to better myself at the next stage of my life or the next project or the next experience?
So it doesn't stop you cold in your tracks.
Absolutely not.
So you've got this drive as well. Do you ever stand still long enough, actually, to do just one thing and enjoy it?
It's a great question, Les. You know, my personal life and my professional life are very intertwined. I've learned a little balance, you know, to put my iPhone down when I come in the house for a couple of hours. But, you know, we are always working. We're in a very competitive marketplace right now. Healthcare costs are soaring.
Absolutely.
And if we can come and be that private sector solution, or as many look at Wellnet and say, kind of the escape hatch to Obamacare, you know, we're kind of the Under Armour to Nike, and this is our time, so we're going to get it. So if we have to work at 7 a.m. or 7 p.m. or 1 o'clock in the morning to do something, we do what we have to do to get it done, and that's both myself and my team. I would never ask anybody to do anything that I wouldn't do myself.
You have kids?
Three young kids, 12, 10, and almost 7.
So like you growing up, how is it for them?
Oh, they are... you know, they're good students and they're involved in after school activities, but they know too, you know, they get an allowance, and if they want more, they got to go out and make it themselves, wash the car or do some extra chores around the house or for the neighbors. You know, that's the way that I've taught them. Nothing is ever given to you. You have to earn it. And, you know, I have a great partner in my wife, Stephanie, who, you know, really, she's not so much how was your day. It's, you know, how many lives did you put on? She helps to drive and motivate me, because lives is how we at Wellnet measure the business. So, you know,
not just about money.
Yeah, no, it's about doing well and doing good and giving back. I'm on the board of Sasha Bruce Youth Work here in town, which is an organization that actually helps homeless children and after school activities, vocational skills. So I spent a lot of time there growing that and mentoring. And, you know, it's about giving back, you know, doing well, again, as I mentioned, and doing good.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mom, what was she doing through all of this?
My mother was a homemaker, but I have to tell you, my brother and I, we wouldn't have turned out to be the people we are without my mother. My father, terrific leader and, you know, businessman, and taught us a great deal about economics and finance. But my mother really was the people side, the soft side, the communicator, and really teaching us to become good people, good listeners.
And how does that translate into leading an organization or building a business?
You know, when I call people into my office and have a discussion, you know, they want to have a performance review, it's really most of the time it's 90% listening and 10% talking. It's their nickel. It's their time. And so, you know, if I didn't have that for my mother, I probably would never have learned that skill.
What does that do? What do you think that does for the other person who's sitting across from you when you're doing that with them?
It makes, you know, for me, it makes them feel important, like what they have to say is critical to both themselves, the career, the business, and at the end of, you know, the session, it's almost like therapy for them. They feel like they've been validated. They bring out good ideas. They bring out some ideas that may need some improvement, but at the end of the day, they've got a voice.
And that's important in building a business and
absolutely.
Running a business?
Absolutely. Building a business, building a team, retaining both employees inside and retaining customers on the outside, because the way that we treat people inside is how they're going to carry forward on the outside. I just finished reading a terrific book called The Hard Thing About Hard Things from Ben Horowitz, and it talks about all the challenges about building a business. It doesn't tell you what to do. It gives you the experiences to learn from, and Ben Horowitz, he's the other half of the partner at Andreessen Horowitz. I highly recommend this read because it shares with you real-life examples. It's not business 101. It's all the things you want to hear from other CEOs and other CFOs about the mistakes they've made and the opportunities they've learned from.
What do you think if I actually had a chance to go into your organization and ask the employees, what's the one thing that you bring to the table that they really do value and appreciate? What would it be, you think?
I'd say they would say a couple of things. You know, a good listener, very particular, you know, high degree of expectations, and fair.
And fair.
Absolutely.
Fair is important?
Very fair. People want to work with fair people. They don't want to feel taken advantage of, both an employee, a customer, or anybody else that you come across with. You know, do what you say what you do, deliver, follow up, execute. A lot of those things are missing in life, and I learned a lot of that from my grandfather who, you know, everything was done with a handshake, and, you know, it's a different way of doing business in this environment than two generations ago.
Yeah.
And if you can carry some of that forward, you know, maybe what you deliver can then also be passed on and paid forward to others as well.
Excellent. Thank you. We've been speaking with Keith Lammer, President, Wellnet Healthcare. Keith, what's the website address?
www.wellnet.com. That's WELLNET.com. Wellnet.com.
Thanks, Keith. This is your host, Les Smolin, and I'd like to thank our listening audience for being there for us and hopefully providing for them an educational and entertaining show. I'd also like to remind you to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. And you can also hear this program again at businesstalkradio.net. We've had a great lineup of guests: Kathy Calvin, President and CEO of United Nations Foundation; Gary Shoemaker, President and CEO, C2 Solutions Group; Cynthia Traeger, Director of DC Founders Institute; and Keith Lammer, President, Wellnet Healthcare. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
How is pulmonary hypertension? Like a zebra. Doctors are taught, when you hear hoofbeats, think horses, not zebras. They associate common symptoms with common ailments. But sometimes, hoofbeats do suggest a zebra. Are you noticing breathlessness, dizziness, chest pain, swollen ankles and legs, and wondering why? Sometimes it's asthma, COPD, sleep apnea, obesity. But sometimes it's pH. Pulmonary hypertension is a medical zebra, often mistaken for more common diseases and often misdiagnosed for several years. The next time you hear, consider pulmonary hypertension, because early diagnosis and treatment are critical to slowing the progression of this serious illness. The Pulmonary Hypertension Association, empowered by hope. To learn more, visit sometimesitsph.org.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. and Federal News Radio.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not